to maintain our temples by preaching. And preaching basically meant distributing books and cultivating people. But at the same time, Prabhupada also wanted that we should have big setup. Prabhupada was very proud when we had the building in the 55th Street in New York, that 12-story building. Prabhupada was very proud of that. And he used to show the picture of the building to the people and say that, we have a 12-story building in New York for our temple. Prabhupada, when he built Vrindavan temple and then when he built Bombay temple, he was very very proud, and his outlook also was very broad. Like, he wanted to make a huge temple in Bombay, and he actually did build a huge temple in Bombay, fully marble, with 6-story guest houses, 2 6-story buildings as the guest house. Prabhupada wanted to build Mayapur. In Mayapur, Prabhupada wanted to build a city, a spiritual city, with an airstrip and all kinds of modern facilities. So, although Prabhupada taught us that the Vedic culture is based on simple living and high thinking, but Prabhupada also was not impractical. Prabhupada wanted to set up our society in such a way that people become attracted to our society. So here in Radhadesh we have a nice setup, and I'm sure Srila Prabhupada would be very proud of it. Prabhupada is very proud of such a nice castle for our temple. And Prabhupada also wanted that we should use these facilities for preaching. Like, big place means big expense. Big place means big headache. Now, devotees generally don't want to take up these big headaches of big expenses. But at the same time, Prabhupada wanted it because for the sake of preaching. Now, if we have the big expense, big headache, but if we do not preach, then it will be a waste of an endeavor, big endeavor, waste of a big facility. So we have to be very, very concerned about the need of preaching, need of utilizing the facility. And I can see that it is happening. Like, I already seen plans that the devotees are making for the preaching in summer, attracting a lot of people, a lot of tourists, attracting a lot of people for the seminars, to attend seminars. So there are different plans that you all have taken, and I'm sure those plans will be very successful. Or rather, those plans will be successfully implemented. Now, sometimes we have a concept that we have to maintain by distributing books. Now, when we have a smaller setup, then it is possible to maintain the setup by distributing books. But if we have a big setup like this, with limited devotees and not such facilities to cut down the expenses, like big place like this automatically demands big expenses. So then it becomes rather impossible to maintain just by book distribution. Like if we want to, say, maintain Bombay Temple out of book distribution, or if we want to maintain Mayapur by book distribution, it won't be practical. So we have to understand that although book distribution is our main means of preaching, but book distribution always will not be the main source of our maintenance. So for that, we have to think of other possibilities. Now, generally, in the past, what used to happen in India is the temples were built by rich people, and they used to be maintained by rich people. Usually the kings used to build temples, and kings used to maintain the temples. And the saintly people, the brahmanas, used to take care of the temples. Like when the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they built the temples. They didn't go out and collect money themselves, or they did not raise the money, raise the funds themselves. People came and helped them out. One big businessman came and helped Sanatana Goswami build. The general of Akbar, the king of India at that time, built the temple for Rupa Goswami, Man Singh. So this way, different rich people came and built the temples, and they maintained the temples as well. But unfortunately, in this age of Kali, people have become so demoniac that people don't think in terms of donating money to build temples, nor do they feel like supporting the temple's maintenance. So that's why Prabhupada had to start a new way of maintaining temples. And that is different means of earning money for the sake of maintaining temples. And in India we had the system of making life members. We still have the system, and practically through that, and that's the system by which we are maintaining our temples. Of course, it's not a very practical way of doing it. So the same way in the West, we developed some means of earning money through running our businesses. Now, there's nothing wrong if different devotees with the ability to run business, make the money, and then support the temple. Actually, that's how it should be. Prabhupada often used to say that the Vedic society, the Varnashram society, actually rests on the householders. The householders, because they are involved in their household, because they are very much involved in the affairs of the material world, they were given the assignment to earn money, make money, and support the rest of the society, namely the brahmacharis, vanaprasthis, and sannyasis. And brahmacharis, vanaprasthis, and sannyasis had their needs were also very, very limited. A brahmachari would not need more than just one or two meals a day and a little cloth to wear, and that's about all he needed. And he rendered a lot of service, took care of the cows, took care of the agriculture, took care of collecting logs from the forest, and so on and so forth. The sannyasis, they just traveled around and preached. Whenever they got food, they ate. If they didn't get food, they didn't eat. So it's not difficult to maintain such people. Now, in the age of Kali, the society has become very much topsy-turvy. And as a matter of fact, in the age of Kali, the society turns upside down. And it has been said that in the age of Kali, the sannyasis will have fat bank balance, and the grihasthas will go begging from the sannyasis. It's a complete upside down. Like usually the grihasthas support the society and the sannyasis and brahmacharis go out and beg from the grihasthas. But in this age, the grihasthas will beg from the sannyasis. And it's a fact, actually. Whatever has been said in the scriptures is a fact. Also, it has been described that in the age of Kali, the lamps will burn with the wicks downwards. In Bhavishya Puran, it has been described. Usually in the early days, people used to get the light from lamps. And the lamp used to have a wick. The wick used to be upwards, and that's how it used to burn. But they described that in the age of Kali, the lamps will burn with the wicks downwards. And we can see that that's exactly what is happening. All these predictions in the Puranas about the age of Kali is correct to the point. So, anyway, we do not really depend on that kind of social structure, or we do not want to become influenced by the age of Kali. We want to follow the pure Vedic structure, pure Vedic way of life. And for that, we must follow whatever has been instructed in the scriptures. So according to the Vedic understanding, the grihasthas, the householders, would take care of the society. And the householders will go out and make money. They will run business or they will do different things, and a part of their income will go to support the society, the temples. I mean, that's the perfect way of doing it. And so I notice that sometimes devotees tend to become a little fanatical and say, well, Prabhupada said book distribution and that's the only way, and no more paraphernalia or other things for maintaining our temples. But actually they fail to understand one thing, that this paraphernalia are actually the business of the householders. And the householders are entitled to run their own business. Brahmacharis and sannyasis are supposed to preach directly. And that direct preaching is book distribution. So yes, brahmacharis and sannyasis will distribute books. But we cannot say that every grihastha also have to distribute books. We have to allow the grihasthas to develop their own business. So if a householder develops his business, it can be any kind of business. It can be a cottage industry. It can be trading business. It can be manufacturing business. It can be any form of business. Actually, the Vedic definition of business is catering to the demands of the society. The society has need, and a businessman caters to the demand of the society. Wherever there is a need, the businessman supplies that demand to that demand, and in the process, he makes his profit. So if a householder makes profit by buying and selling, then there is nothing wrong with that. Because he has the responsibility of running his household. Plus he also has the responsibility to support the temple. So often we put a lot of emphasis on book distribution. But that should not be misunderstood as the only means of sustenance for our devotees. Yes, brahmacharis should not get into business. Sannyasis should not get into business. And they should preach and distribute books. But the grihasthas, the householders, can run their business. Now, what kind of business they will run, that should not be dictated by the sannyasis or brahmacharis. One should have his independence or his ability to figure out what business he will run. Because a vaishya or an expert businessman, he does not really need any guidance to run how to run his business. He knows how to run his business. And the brahmanas and kshatriyas also do not give guidance to the businessman, business community, how to run their business. They may give guidance how to spend their money, but how they will make their money, that should be their concern. And a businessman should be given a lot of facilities, a lot of freedom to run his business. If we try to control them at every step, then their style will get cramped. So, I personally feel that if somebody has some aptitude to run business, he shouldn't be criticized. Instead, he should be encouraged, and we should feel grateful that these persons are making such sacrifice in order to support Krishna's temple, Radha Gopinath's temple. So I think when you think about self-sufficiency, we have to look up to the householder community. And we have to give them the freedom to run their setup, run their business, and support the Radha Desh Yatra. And then only it will be very healthy and a natural way of supporting Radha Desh. I would request the householder devotees to think about different ways and means how they can raise funds to support Radha Gopinath's temple. And there are various ways we can think of, and we actually have such a wonderful facility. Like ours is an international society, and we have contacts and connections all over the world, and we can take advantage of that. Actually, business means buying and selling. You buy things where it is cheap and sell where it is expensive. And the difference is your margin of profit. So, we have the whole world to buy, and we also have the whole world to sell. And in the process, you make your profit, and you can contribute a part of it for the maintenance of Radha Gopinath's temple. And while Radha Gopinath's temple is being taken care of, in the process naturally the brahmacharis and other members of the community will also be taken care of. Brahmacharis, sannyasis, or those who are depending on the temple, or those who have dedicated themselves completely to serve the temple. So, to become self-sufficient for a wonderful jatra like this, I don't think it's difficult at all. And as a matter of fact, we don't even have such a big expense for this jatra. Like in America, just a medium-sized temple. To run a medium-sized temple in America, we need about $30,000. $40,000, and if it's a big temple, then you're talking about $60,000-$70,000 a month. Whereas the need that we have for this temple, Radha Desh temple, is very minimal. It's not a big expense, but we have a nice, healthy community, and we also have the potential to develop this community. We can actually develop a community of 200, 250 people here. So, I'm sure if we take that positive attitude, then we'll very easily be able to become self-sufficient. And everybody has to become conscious about the need of becoming self-sufficient. The householder should consider that the temple needs their help, and they should consider how to help the temple out. And the inmates of the temple should also consider how best they can do to help Radha Desh become self-sufficient. Agriculture, of course, is another side that we have to seriously consider developing. At least we can be self-sufficient we can meet our basic needs of fruits and flowers and vegetables. That's not a very big thing. And I'm sure there are various ways of making or various ways of establishing our setup that we do become self-sufficient in near future. Let's all try to do that. Please, everyone think in that line and see how it can be done. Otherwise, if we just depend on a handful of devotees, handful of householders, to take the big burden of such a big community, then it will also become difficult. And another danger in that is that if they somehow fail, if a handful of people are solely shouldering the burden, and if they fail or if they leave, then the whole structure will be in a jeopardy. So that's why it is better that we collectively, as a group, as a united group, we shoulder the burden of maintaining this temple. Because if we are collectively doing that, cooperatively doing that, then if somebody fails at times, then it won't really cause so much of a hurt, so much of a damage. But if the whole thing is depending on two or three persons, and if one person fails, that means we are facing a deficiency of 33%. If two person fails, then it's 66%. And if all three fail, then you have 100%. So we should try to share it among ourselves so that it doesn't become too much of a burden for one person or a handful of people, but collectively we take up the responsibility. So if some of you want to make some comments, maybe Bhati Gopal Prabhu, you want to contribute some ideas? Or if you have some comments or some questions, you can. Yes.
Yes, definitely there is nothing wrong for a grihastha to do any kind of business.
Any kind of business means it has to be a bona fide, right?
Legitimate
business. Yeah. generally we don't get into stock market because that's gambling. But yeah, it is a gambling business, right? But we generally tend to run businesses that are straightforward, clean-cut business, that is buying and selling, or producing and selling. That's the cleanest way of doing business. But of course, due to our immaturity, our business setup was not very, very sound. We sometimes did business, but we didn't pay tax. We didn't keep books. And that may cause big damage in the long run. So anyway, now we are becoming aware of those defects and we are trying to legalize our businesses as much as we can. And actually, businesses should be legal. Because when somebody does business, the country where he is running the business, he is actually liable to pay tax to the country, because in the country he's getting so many facilities. So he's getting the facilities and it's his duty to pay for those facilities. Now, if he evade taxes, then it's actually a crime. So we should try not to be so naive about things. And as far as business is concerned, we should try not to get involved in unbona fide businesses. And as for that matter, about stockbroker's business, when Prabhupada first started his career, he actually became a broker in the stock market. he decided to do that because he didn't want to take up a job. He thought taking up a job is a Sudra's business. Right? So he wanted to become a businessman. And he also comes from a business family, the Vaishya family. And so he decided to become a broker in the share market. But his father's friend, Dr. Kartik Bose, he wanted him to become his manager for his pharmaceutical company. And he actually persuaded Prabhupada a lot. Prabhupada didn't want to become a manager, or he didn't want to take up a job. But then Prabhupada's father persuaded him, and then he became a manager of Kartik Bose's laboratory. So in a way we can say, well, if Prabhupada did it, then it's kind of bona fide. Yes, Pratap. Well, if somebody wants to remain a brahmachari and run a business, he can. There's no harm. But my point is, every brahmachari shouldn't think of becoming a businessman. Right? There may be some brahmacharis there may be some devotees who wouldn't like to get into household life. But, you know, he may, in his mature state, may think of starting a business. Right? But the sannyasis should not. That's very, very artificial. Although in our societies it has been, there had been quite a few sannyasis who are running their businesses, but it's kind of, it's not appropriate, it's not proper. Yes.
How does it apply to the
artwork. In business, some speculation will always be there. Right? But that kind of speculation and gambling are not exactly the same. I mean, gambling goes to the extreme. Like, you see, the definition of gambling is trying to get, aspiring for the highest maximum gain with the least investment. Right? Trying to get, aspiring for the highest maximum gain with the least investment. Right? You invest, you know, very little. Say you invest £1 and you aspire to get £1,000,000 in return. But in a way, business is a gambling in a much lesser degree. Like when you're buying something with an intention to sell something, that you're going to make some profit. I mean, otherwise, why should you do it? No one tries to get into business to lose. Everyone does business to profit, to make profit. So a certain amount of speculation is involved. Like you may think that, well, I will buy it in Belgium. Say, I'll buy wheat in Belgium, because it's cheap here, and I'll sell it in Germany, where it's more expensive, right? So now, then also there are a few factors that are involved. Like then you begin to think, I mean, if you consider a few things, like in Germany, at that point of time, say, in October when the crops are, crops are scarce, or when the grains are scarce, there's a scarcity of grain, then the price will go up. So instead of selling it in July, I will sell it in October. Right? I mean, that kind of speculation, you know, will be always there. So that's why the business people have been advised, according to the Vedas, to give 50% of their profit to Krishna conscious activities. Because when you're running a business, you are actually taking some sinful reactions. Some sin is accumulated with the money. No matter what business you do. Right. Actually, same principle applies to everything. Like when you get into estate agency, it's the same thing. Like you buy a building now, and you think after 10 years, you know, the value will go up by so many percents, and you are going to make so much profit. Right? So we'll say it is gambling, and that's why you have to pay 50% of your profit. It is all right, yeah.
Seems like one of the elements which would be considered making a distinction would be the evangelists lose more often than they win. Therefore, there must be the influence of Tamas. That's obvious.
Right.
Because it's not good business to gamble. It's well known. A second element which is there, which indicates a big difference, is the kind of feverish mentality which compulsive gamblers
to stake everything.
Which
yeah.
is really that bewilderment of the mind, which is also another another symptom of the tamo. So it's different. It's not really
That's true.
Whereas business ordinarily would be in the passion, desiring the result, but it's still there's enough clear thinking to be able to be reasonably sure that you will get your result. But in the tamasic mode, they don't get the result, and they're not even able to think of the matter in a clear way.
That's a very good point. Thank you. Any other question? Yes, Mother Arna.
Now we all the time talk about household, so actually the door depends on being some friends, for example. But what about householders who are the service of their actually giving, of course, the temple money, or they may not bring, at least not bring any money?
It's not that every householder has to get into business. Some householders, those who have the aptitude, they will do that. And some householders, those who are not so much inclined into business but into preaching or temple worship and deity worship and other things, you know, they'll contribute their service, and all are equally important. Everyone is actually contributing his service to the temple. That's what counts. Like in the temple, there'll be Brahmins. Most of the people in the temple will be Brahmins. And Brahmins don't go out to make money. Right? But there will be plenty of people also connected to the community, connected to the society. Those will be into business. They would love to do it. If you ask them to do Brahminical work, then they'll get tired. They'll get bored. So our business is to allow everybody develop his specific ability, right? Somebody will have Brahminical abilities, we have to allow them to develop that. Somebody with a Kshatriya ability, we have to allow them to develop that. And same way somebody with Vaishya ability, we have to allow them to develop that. And Brahmins also will bring in money by preaching. They'll preach and make people give big donations, right? So, but main thing is that we are actually not so much concerned about how much, right? We are simply concerned about, you know, how sincerely one is rendering the service. The example is that of the spider and Hanuman. The spider was just throwing some sands while Ramchandra was building the bridge across the ocean. And Hanuman told the spider, get out of my way. Hanuman was carrying big, big mountain peaks, right, to throw on the ocean, throw into the ocean. And then Ramchandra told Hanuman, Hanuman, don't you ever think that the service that the spider is rendering is anything less than yours. So somebody will carry boulders, mountain peaks, and somebody will throw some grains of sands. But in Krishna's eyes, both are equally important. As long as they do it with their sincere love for Krishna. Any other question? Yes, Pritham. Yeah.
And they were selling all the sweets like the
you know, they've been preaching the same part, then it becomes favorable, they will then come to the temple as well. So that was a really good idea, you know, if you went to a small shop in the town or something, you know, they were used to look after.
Right. Actually, that place that they have in Heidelberg is a very small place. It's a very low cost thing set up, but it has a very good turnover. Very good turnover. Also, another, in ISKCON, at different places, we have many such successful businesses. Like another one is in Switzerland, in our farm. One devotee's parents donated an oven, professional oven, huge, big oven. And they started making breads and pastries. And when they started, they actually started last year. And they took up a shop in the town near the village, you can say, Sessa. It's a small village, small town, very small town. And a small shop they took up. And the first day they started selling their bread, in a couple of hours, everything was sold out. And then our bread started selling so well that all the other bread supply, there was a co-op, like a big departmental store that used to get the supply, and their bread were just accumulating dust on the shelves, and they wouldn't sell. Because few advantages were there for us, that our bread was fresh. So people preferred to buy our bread instead of theirs, because they're, you know, supplied from hundreds of miles away, and God knows when they were actually made, and so on and so forth. And they were actually selling for 1,000 francs a day. So 1,000 francs a day meant actually at least 50% profit. That means they were making 500 francs straight every day. And it was the effort of only two devotees. But that was a very taxing job. Because when you run a bakery, you have to stay up the whole night. You have to work through the night so that the bread is ready in the morning. And anyway, they'll start again this summer. In a couple of months, they'll start the bakery. Now in the winter, it's closed. So there are many, many ways that we can, in economics, the simple definition of wealth is the proper utilization of manpower towards productivity. Every man has some ability to do something. But when that ability is utilized to cater to the demands, then it is productive. Like a man has the ability to, say, make bread, and there's a demand of bread in the society. So the man, instead of doing something else, he produces bread and he supplies it to the market, and by doing that he gets the profit. He makes the profit. So everybody has the ability. Every man has certain abilities. And it's a matter of using that ability towards productivity. It has to be productive, right? When we utilize the ability, And it becomes productive. That productivity is the wealth. And that needs expert implementation. Prabhupada used to say that utilizing a man's propensity. And Prabhupada was very expert in doing that. Prabhupada knew who is capable of doing what. Who is best in what service. And Prabhupada would engage them according to that service and inspire them. And that's why actually ISKCON was flourishing so wonderfully when Prabhupada was here. And it was a very, very positive advancement. Everybody was engaged, everybody was doing his best, and that's how the society was flourishing. Anyway, I'm sure, actually this Jatra has some very expert devotees. And the devotees are very dedicated. So I'm sure we'll be, in a few years' time, you'll see that this Jatra is flourishing very. Yes, I just said that. Now, not that everybody will do business. Different devotees will render service according to their propensities. Right? And in the society, there is a need for every kind of service. When you're talking about a society, you need somebody to cook, you need somebody to grow vegetables, you need somebody to cut vegetables, you need somebody to eat the vegetables. And you need somebody to clean the pots after eating. So there is a need for everyone. And yes, somebody can be a nurse. Well, it depends, like so often pujaris actually don't have the time to go out and preach. But they do preach. By worshipping the deities, they're preaching. By dressing the deities, they're preaching. When people come and see the deities so wonderfully decorated, then they get very impressed and they think that, yes, this Krishna consciousness movement is a very nice movement. So that's preaching. So in Krishna consciousness, everyone is preaching, directly or indirectly. Even a person who is cleaning the floor, he is preaching, because when people come and see that the floor is so clean, they become very impressed. And that's also preaching. With somebody who is cooking in the kitchen, he is preaching, because when somebody eats the prasad, he gets Krishna. So, everyone who is engaged in Krishna consciousness, Krishna conscious activities in the temple, is preaching. Some may go out and some may not go out, but both are preaching.
Devotee.
Right. Right, right.
That may be as effective or even more effective since the audience is more receptive.
Like I remember, there are two brothers in Mayapur, Pankaj Angri and Jananivash. They're twins. They never go out of the temple. They're all the time there in the temple. Actually, not only, I mean, they are in the temple room practically day and night. Right? In last 10 years, you know, I think once or twice only they went across the Ganges. Right? They're so dedicated. But they're such pure devotees. And they are preaching to the devotees in a very, very soft way. Like I remember once some devotee was serving prasad. And prasad serving sometimes may become a little passionate affair. So the boy who was serving, he became very agitated, and that pujari Jananivas Prabhu, after he took prasad, then he just mildly told him that while serving prasad, try not to talk. Right. And just that small little instruction worked so wonderfully to that devotee that, you know, he made it a point, the devotee made it a point not to talk while serving prasad. So there was no room for getting agitated. Even if he got agitated, you know, it was inside and he didn't let it out. So and sometimes devotees go out and preach to the outsiders, and sometimes devotees will preach to the devotees inside. Yeah. Right. Yeah, true. I mean, today I was actually talking to Ramananda. Ramananda was worried that how we are going to handle so many tourists. So, yeah, actually that's true. And that's why, and that is the success of a setup like this. Let people come. We do not have to go out. Let people come here and then we'll preach to them. That's what I feel about Mayapur. Like in Mayapur, you do not really have to go out. We can just sit there and thousands of people are coming and we can just preach to them. But sometimes we become over-passionate and we think that, no, we have to go out and preach. Right? But it's actually passion. So, any other question? Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.